Opening bell in about 20 seconds. Let me just set the stage for you.
Money, money, I want more money.
You cannot have it all.
This whole system is too confusing.
Hi, I'm Ben White, and this is Politico Money. Today on the show, my conversation with Larry Kudlow, the director of the National Economic Council. I met Larry in his office on the second floor of the West Wing of the White House. He's got a pretty big office by West Wing standards, and we sat around his conference table, Larry and I. He was dressed as usual in his impeccable Wall Street style suit, and he was munching on a little snack for breakfast. And I was talking to him 2 days after the midterm elections, and I wondered what he thought of the results.
I woke up in the morning worried, not about the election. I thought the election results were fine for him. Mm-hmm. I was worried about the messaging.
So the message that Larry Kudlow wants to get out to people is his view that we're in an economic boom.
I wanted to get the economic message. We are in a boom. And you'll hear more about this from me and him, I hope.
By the way, by him, he means Trump. Larry and I have been friends for a while, since he was a host on CNBC. I was on a show a number of times. We got to know each other in Manhattan and have spent a fair amount of time together. So Larry's a friend, even though we often have significant economic disagreements. And obviously, I cover him as I would anybody else in a position of power. But I have known Larry for quite some time. All right, so back to our conversation. It's 2 days after the midterm elections, and there's been a significant change in power in Congress. Democrats now control the House of Representatives.
The change in the Congress, so the Dems have the House, but we picked up in the Senate, which is very powerful. The growth factors, the lower taxes, particularly on business, the deregulation, now a lot of that's executive order, but a lot of it's legislation of Congress. The energy, that stuff is not going to be overturned. That's one of the key messages of the election. It's not going to be overturned. And the market, I think, breathed a sigh of relief yesterday. That's where I'm going. I want to get that word out.
So it breathed a sigh of relief, but Democrats won the House. And I do remember you saying that part of the worry was Democrats taking over. They took over one chamber and market didn't really worry about it.
Not enough.
Right. It would have sold off if Democrats had won the Senate.
That's my take.
Got it.
That's speculative. But.
Yeah. Let me ask you one thing about the midterms, and that is, we do have a good economy. We got low unemployment. We got, job creation is fast. Presumably, you would think that Republican candidates for House races would do better in an economy like that. Why do you think they didn't?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I was talking to some, I'm not a political genius. I think one issue is there were so many retirements, and it really gave the Dems openings. So many retirements. And I think that was kind of an X factor in their calculations. But, you turn it over. I think we all saw it coming.
Yeah.
I was hoping it would be like 12, so it was 30, whatever. But the main thing is, they will not over. I said this a lot coming down the home stretch, right? I'm not political. I'm not, people names, but I kept saying to people. People ask me, "What's the biggest worry you have about the economy? Is it trade? Is it interest rates?" And my reaction has been pretty consistent. No, it's a changed Congress that will overturn these policies.
But they can't really overturn them with the president in the Oval Office.
That's correct. And that's a good thing from my standpoint.
Right.
I'm very happy. Now, I will spend some time the next week or two or three messaging that.
Yeah.
Messaging that.
I want to go into a couple of things that came up in the press conference yesterday, and that is areas of agreement, potential agreement between the White House and Democrats and Congress. And that is, one on infrastructure. And two, the president seemed to flirt a little bit with the idea that you would be open to certain tax increases in return for middle class tax cuts. Now, he didn't give any specifics, and Republicans don't love tax hikes, but where is that a real thing? Could that happen?
We've been noodling more on this middle class tax cut, how to structure it and even pay for it revenue neutral. I don't think the chances of that are very high, because the Democrats are going to go after the corporate tax and all that stuff. And I don't think the president will swap tax hike. I just don't. Yeah. I know he said it, but he said it, I think, more in the nature of which work together.
Yeah.
And I'd like to work together. Some things I think are irreconcilable. Other things are possible.
And
you know, I interviewed Nancy Pelosi three times in my career. Twice before she was elected speaker, and then once when she was out of office. And we actually get along fine.
Right, sure.
Okay, so then I wanted to talk to Larry about infrastructure spending and this idea that somehow President Trump and Democrats who control the House could join hands and come together and make a deal to spend a bunch of money on building new infrastructure projects in the U.S., roads, bridges, all the rest of it. There's some hope out there that there's common ground on this, but I've always been skeptical of that, and that Democrats aren't likely to want to give Trump a big win on infrastructure, and Republicans realize we just don't have the money.
I think, Ben, we're going to have to do a highway bill. The last one was 2015, whatever that was, $300 or $400 billion, and it lapses. So we have to look this up. So it'll be there, but as you said, the money is not. Anybody that thinks, you know, like this $1 trillion number, which is over 10 years. But you know, that's, you know, that could be when they're filled with a couple $100 billion a year.
Yeah.
We don't have that.
Yeah.
We just don't. And around here, you know, we fought hard to get the president's 5% budget cut.
Right.
Mick Mulvaney and Kevin were in here last night, and Mnuchin's been here. We're talking about these. So yeah, I am working very hard on the energy.
I'm going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
And we're certainly interested in what that looks like. Like, is that, you know, LNG pipelines? Is it permitting? Is it legislative? Is it executive order? And I know you've sort of been deeply ensconced in the energy world. Anything you can tell me about how you go about, you know, getting faster growth through energy deregulation?
The hottest thing is the natural gas,
yeah,
which can then cheaply, you know, be turned into LNG. I mean, you ice it, and and the second part of that is gas is so cheap, and the technology is now so good. Even though we don't have the pipelines yet, they can ship from the Gulf to Europe and still be competitive with Russia. Only because Russia will subsidize it.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we had the guy in. I don't want to name names, but a couple of big companies. And they can do it, believe it or not, at $5 to $7.
Mm.
Okay? Russia would sell usually at $7 to $9, but we know they will subsidize if they have to. But we're going to fight them tooth and nail. And the attitude in Europe, this is part of my EU trade thing that I'm working very hard on. The attitude of the EU is... to do it with the U.S. They don't want Russia. And Merkel has run out of support on that.
Yeah.
This is something I discovered when Juncker was here this summer. And my contact is the number two guy, Martin Selmayr.
Yeah.
And I didn't know this. And POTUS didn't know it either. So two things. We can get it cheap, right? And they're going to change their attitude. So what Merkel has done, I'm actually getting some credit for that. But I was working through some of her senior people, you know, to move that. Because they don't want to do it either. They don't like the Russians. They don't like them.
Sure. Well, for reasons.
So now, the tasks here, the multiple tasks, and this is not going to be easy, you know, to pipe it east and west, which we would like to do, we'd like to sell to, you know, Asia.
Sure.
We need permits.
Mm-hmm.
We need, you know, timely permits. But in some cases, Ben, we have to stop the blocking. Some of these states are blocking this stuff. And that's especially true, well, Northeast, but it's also California. We'll probably have to go into Mexico to do this one to get it out.
They're blocking for environmental reasons. Or
so they say.
Right.
Even though testing has been done a million times, but yes. So that's a challenge,
right.
Okay? The second challenge is less difficult. These companies will pay for it themselves.
Right. There's no subsidies needed.
They don't need it. Yeah. They don't want it. In fact, we had one guy in here. I parachuted him into the Oval, and then he spoke to our NEC cabinet lunch, they'll build at key junctures in these pipelines. I don't have the map here, but they'll build like communities, okay, hospitals and schools, you know, the whole nine yards. And they'll do it. We don't have to do it. They'll do it. Right. I mean, I think that's so we're mapping out where and how and so forth. And we're, you know, we got a legal discussion going. And then the other thing is we really would like to revive the American shipping industry, which has been dead for years. And a lot of people blame that on the Jones Act, right? I myself haven't made an opinion about that, but, and we had this discussion with POTUS, we must revive shipping. It's dead. We have no ships, hardly any, and we haven't built any. And it would be nice, like, if one of the purposes here would be to get natural gas into LNG and send it to Europe.
Using American ships.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Which could be designed to streamline, you know, not all ships are equal.
Yeah.
So I'm not an expert. Yeah. I used to have clients, by the way, the Greek shippers.
But shipping magnates. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, they're wonderful. They're terrific. Yeah. None of them live in Greece.
Well, I'm sure they have homes there.
Something. I don't know. I don't want to pay taxes.
Mykonos or whatever.
Anyway, they were my pals. And I had them on the show.
Yeah.
That's a big thing
shipping here. Okay.
Now, can that be blocked, let's say, by enviro sensitive people in the house? I don't know that yet.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it can be blocked.
Right.
I'm really not. And the other question we're researching, and this is legal stuff, how far could we go with executive orders? Because, you know, POTUS is very keen on that. We don't know yet.
Okay.
But we're working very hard on it.
Okay. On the energy and the shipping. Okay.
And then that dovetails into the trade.
Which I wanted to ask you about next, and specifically about the idea, you know, right before the election, the president said, we've made progress, great progress, with Xi Jinping. Nobody seemed to know exactly what that progress was, and I wasn't aware of any actual talks happening.
You
talked to them.
Oh, I did, because I was... So one of my guys was on the call. It was a quick decision.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine, he's the president. It was not... Can we go off the record for a second? I want to give you some knowledge.
Right. So we went off the record here, which happens a lot in my interviews with sources. But here's what I can tell you about what's happening with trade with China. President Trump has a huge meeting coming up at the end of November with Xi Jinping, the premier of China, at the G20, the Group of 20 meeting in Buenos Aires, Argentina. A lot of high hopes and high expectations that that meeting will at least hopefully avoid a giant trade war with China. But honestly, nobody, Larry Kudlow or anybody else, knows exactly what's going to happen in that high stakes meeting between Trump and Xi Jinping. Back on the record. I wanted to know how Larry the Free Trader is making the case internally that free trade is good.
Coming into this White House, you got a NAFTA deal, so that's a positive, although you got a Congress to approve it, USMCA.
That's correct.
But China is still obviously a big concern of yours, concern of the markets. How have you found it, like making the case internally that free trade is good?
Right. So we've reopened the EU, very important. And we had a lot of help from the other side. And POTUS, it was easy for me to convince POTUS to have a joint statement on a press conference. That's back in July 25th. That was huge, because that meeting could have been a disaster. And the morning of the meeting, I conveyed message from Juncker, from this guy, again, Somar, who's the number two guy, I don't know what, it's director general of the EU, whatever. He said to me, we want to do business with you, we'll do soybeans, we'll do LNG, we'll do that. So I conveyed that, and the president's whole attitude changed. Mm-hmm. So we went into the bilat, and it was really good. And the what we call the three zeros, the president used it, zero tariffs, zero non-tariff barriers, and zero subsidies. Those are goals. Juncker agreed with that. So we're now in the process of creating a significant package, we call it early harvest, and so far it's moving quite nicely. Okay, so that's we may see some results on that. Japan, which is important, we reopened Japan, and I was in the bilat with Abe, who was fabulous. He was fabulous. So we're going to make good progress. The other thing I want to say is, this is underrated. At the UN, we signed this trilateral EU-USA-Japan,
right,
which spent a couple of pages criticizing non-market economies, a.k.a. China. It's all aimed at China. And that's concrete on paper. I sold it to the president. He was in a holy room waiting for a meeting. I said, sir, blah, blah, and he starts to read it. And he says, do you like it? And I had Lighthizer with me. So it worked. It was great. Lighthizer was so cooperative. So that's a commitment. So that, in my view, is a good thing. If the president is going to apply tariffs, let's say, on China, he's going to do it. And, you know, it might not be my first choice, but you know what? The Chinese have been so intransigent, Ben. It may be my, I accept it.
Yeah.
I really do. I know I'm a free trader, but they're not, this is different. This is different. This mm-hmm. isn't free trade.
I also wanted to know how Larry approaches his job compared to his predecessor in the NEC role, Gary Cohn. Gary is the former president of Goldman Sachs, always known as a hard-charging Wall Street guy, would yell at people in meetings and be really tough, and he didn't get along at all with the non-free traders in the White House, people like Peter Navarro, Trump's hardline trade advisor. And there are lots of stories about them clashing in meetings and Gary trying to take stuff off the president's desk. And Larry generally has a very different approach, which is as a conciliator, likes to get along with everybody. He says how good friends he is with people like Peter Navarro. So it was a very different approach. And I really wanted to know how Larry approaches the job as opposed to Gary.
We NEC has authority to do things. I don't use it. I've said this to him. I've never excluded him from a meeting. Never. And only once in have I held back an okay on an op-ed. Only once, and then we lightened it up. It's not my job. He has his views. He's a smart guy. I've known him for 20 years. I'm a bridge builder.
Yeah.
I think people in this building would agree with that. I'm helping them with the media communications.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've had a lot of influence on all of that.
Mm-hmm. How so, in terms of media communications?
Clarity,
mm-hmm.
messages, good messaging, you know. Politics is a lot like religion. You have to say it over and over and over again so you and others will believe it. That's, you know,
yeah.
Keep doing it.
Right.
It's what we did. I helped change the message on trade,
yep.
to give him more of a reformer approach. And with this economic boom, is great. I personally believe it's going to continue for quite some time. If we don't get the CapEx, I'll be wrong, but I think we will. And I just have a list of all the stuff that we do at NEC. I mean, so we talked about energy and infrastructure.
Yeah.
We're heavily involved in healthcare. Right? We talked about trade. We talked about the economy and taxes. I did the 5G thing,
mm-hmm.
got great returns, and laid out our position. We're moving, you know, internet, all the internet issues, the farm issues. We're involved with all that stuff. So I might be tired at the end of the day of so many goddamn meetings.
Yeah.
But the bottom line, I don't know, I love it, Ben.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, the last thing was like, how do you feel physically and how long do you want to stay in the
job? I'm here. I mean, I serve at his pleasure. I think we get along really well. He's been great to me, accessible. You know, I'll call him up and say, you know, I need some guidance or what about this? He's been terrific. Larry, what you got? He loves that. You walk in the old, you want stock market quote, I give him that. So from my...
Even on days when it's going down?
Yes. So from my perspective, it's a good relationship. And we work these things very hard. I mean, we've got smart people and we've changed the staff a lot. See, I did this under the radar screen. When I first came here, you guys were looking... Is he going to fire this and fire that? And we did nothing. And then I did my deputies, and we actually now have a major turnover in almost every spot. And there's great. And after two or three meetings, I remember their names.
Right, yeah. I got to repeat them. Go off the record.
And we went off the record once again. Stay tuned for more reporting from me on Larry Kudlow and the NEC and the trade fights and all the rest of it. Well, that's it for Politico Money. My producer is Jenny Ament. Our executive producer is Dave Shaw. I'm Ben White. Please subscribe to Politico Money wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave us a review. See you again next week.